This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Earth Overshoot Day is the day in the year when humanity has consumed all natural resources provided by the Earth in 1 year. That day is today, the 8th of August 2016. In short, nature's budget for the year expires today. If that's not bad enough, the exhaustion of our annual ecological budget has been moving progressively earlier every year. Joining me now is Stephen Watson, the Director of Corporate Engagement at WWF International, to tell us more. Welcome, Stephen. How are you today?
I'm very good, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Stephen, I understand that you worked for 30 years in the corporate sector before joining WWF. Could you tell me a bit about that?
Yes, indeed. After I left university, I worked for several fast-moving consumer goods companies, always in sales and marketing. But my degree at university was geography, and I've always been interested in environmental issues.
Okay.
And actually, I saw this position with WWF on LinkedIn. So I thought, now or never, and applied for it.
And the rest is history.
The rest is history, yes.
So what exactly do you do as Director of Corporate Engagement?
Well, I'm Director of Corporate Engagement for one of the initiatives, which is the Market Transformation Initiative. We focus on trying to make the production and consumption of priority soft commodities more sustainable. So the priority commodities for us are those linked to deforestation, overfishing, and water scarcity. So they include palm oil, soy, beef, wild-caught fish aquaculture, cotton, and sugarcane. Yeah. Those are the ones with the biggest environmental impacts around the world.
Which brings us to Earth Overshoot Day. Just to start off with, could you tell me how it came about, and could you explain the idea behind it and its origin?
Yes, actually, Earth Overshoot Day is a concept of an organization called Global Footprint Network. The concept, I think, came about in the 1990s, but really gathered pace when Global Footprint Network took charge of it or drove it in the early 2000s. And it's really a simple concept. It's just a result of what humanity demands from nature. In other words, how fast we consume the resources and generate waste and pollution, compared to how fast nature can generate new resources and absorb the waste that we're producing. And if the demand is greater than the supply, then it's an overshoot.
Right.
And unfortunately, our demand on nature has exceeded what it can replenish now for more than 40 years, since the 1970s.
40 years.
For more than 40 years. So, of course, there is only one Earth, and continued overshoot is not sustainable.
So what exactly is nature's budget? I mean, how can we define that?
The way it's calculated is basically the sum of all of the resources that nature can provide. It's otherwise called biocapacity. It's actually quite a complex methodology, so I'm not really familiar with the details of the methodology. But it's basically whatever nature can provide in terms of resources and also what it can absorb in terms of the waste that we generate, especially carbon dioxide that we emit into the atmosphere.
Okay. And this year it's happening today, which is the 8th of August.
Yes.
And I understand that the overshoot day has been moving progressively earlier. Why is this?
Yes, in 2000, even just 16 years ago, Earth Overshoot Day was in October.
No, in August, my goodness.
Now it's 16 years later, it's already in August. It's basically two main factors. Firstly, the growing global population. So we're now at just over 7 billion. So it's almost tripled in even my lifetime. And secondly, the fact that as the population grows, we're also, on average, getting wealthier. So we're consuming more and more.
And wasting more and more as well.
And wasting more and more, indeed. And in fact, we're encouraged to consume more and waste more by society.
Yeah, because a lot of things are cheap, so you just buy, and when it spoils, you just replace and throw, and which is why our landfills are filling up as well.
Absolutely.
So, the effects can be seen everywhere. There's deforestation, there's drought, there's, freshwater scarcity, soil erosion, biodiversity loss, and a buildup of carbon dioxide. And the carbon dioxide buildup, that is just going to exacerbate, all the other issues according to current climate models. With the world's carbon footprint doubling up in the last 45 years. So what can we as individuals do at a collective level?
Well, I think all the stakeholders have to recognize that we have a role to play, whether it's governments, companies, individual consumers, etc. consumers or us as individuals can have a vital impact on the situation. For example, there's huge potential for us to reduce waste. One of the new areas that WWF is moving into is food waste. And from our research, we know that in many countries, people waste as much as 20 or 30% of the food that they buy. Also, with the trend for fast fashion, many clothes are only worn 3 or 5 times before we throw them away.
Yeah.
So there's a huge potential to reduce waste. In terms of companies, it's very important, not only for the environment, but also for they themselves, to ensure that the raw materials they're buying are produced sustainably. I think in the last 10, 15 years, companies have seen huge volatility in supplies and prices of many raw materials, partly because they're not produced sustainably.
Yeah.
And then, of course, on the massive scale, governments need to work together on issues that they can control. And we saw the Paris conference in, I think, October last year, where the governments of the world committed to reduce carbon emissions in order to keep global temperature rises below 2 degrees centigrade from where they were before the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
So I think there's not one solution alone. We all have to play a part.
Do you see that happening in your work at all?
I do, actually. Reassuringly, I am positive because I've seen some of the leading companies of the world. Companies are not the organizations you would expect to be taking the lead on this kind of subject, but companies are taking the lead. Some companies, I should emphasize. And it's not because they're necessarily benevolent, but because it's in their self-interest to do so, because they are seeing the impacts on their supply chains of unreliable supplies.
Any companies that you can mention who have been sort of showing a good example?
Yeah, well, in the report that we did called Slow Road to Sustainability, we identified 22 companies out of about 250, which are members of Consumer Goods Forum, which is a big global business platform. Some of the companies are large multinationals like Unilever, Procter & Gamble. Some are regional companies like Kao Corporation, for example, from Japan. And some are local companies, for example, SCA or Sofidel in Europe.
Okay.
Unfortunately, there are very few Asian companies that we would describe as front runners in this respect.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll talk about the findings of the report in a bit. But you know, just in, on a very philosophical sort of level, do you think that we actually have a right to so much of nature's productivity? You know, at the expense of several other million species living on the planet. You know, does it even serve our self-interest?
Well, absolutely not, because if we continue to overshoot and take more resources than what nature can provide, then life on Earth, unfortunately, itself is threatened. I would say that even within the human species, of course, the use of resources is not very equitable.
Mm-hmm.
So we would definitely encourage a focus on more equitable allocation of resources.
Mm-hmm.
But as you say, many of the other species are really struggling. Every 2 years, WWF produces a report called the Living Planet Report. And we've shown that many species of mammals, for example, have declined by 50% since 1970.
Mm-hmm.
So in just 45 years, the number of some species has actually halved. And some species which used to be very common in Malaysia, for example, have declined to frightening numbers. So,
like the tiger.
Tigers, for example,
yeah.
Elephants.
Elephants, yeah.
And orangutans are three iconic species which are really struggling at the moment.
Yeah, I think our tiger numbers have come down to something like 250 in the wild only.
Yes, that's the latest estimate,
estimate, yeah.
But globally, in 1900, I think there were more than 100,000 tigers in the wild. And now there are about 3,500 to 4,000.
Yeah.
So it's quite shocking.
There were some reports, though, that actually the number has increased just a little bit. So there is, I suppose, all the wonderful work that you guys are doing at WWF and all the other campaigns are working to some level.
Yes, well, we always work with a variety of partners.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a shared effort. I think the tiger population is struggling still in some countries, but has recovered to some extent in other countries. For example, I think in Bhutan,
India,
and Nepal.
Yeah, All right. I'm speaking today to Stephen Watson. He's the Director of Corporate Engagement at WWF International. We're discussing Earth Overshoot Day, which is essentially the day that nature's budget for the year expires. Coming up after the break, we take a look at the WWF report, which was entitled Slow Road to Sustainability, and Stephen will give us some key findings from that. This is Earth Matters on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. In the studio with me today is Stephen Watson. He's the Director of Corporate Engagement at WWF International, and we're discussing Earth Overshoot Day 2016, which is happening today, the 8th of August. Stephen, I was reading last year's report, and you know the impacts of overshoot, they're rather unevenly distributed. I mean, last year's figures from Global Footprint Network showed major states like the US, China, and the UK, for example, they're running at a loss. But countries like Russia, Australia, Canada, other smaller states, they have to take up the shortfall, if I'm correct.
Yes, the second group of countries you mentioned are basically relatively large land areas with relatively small populations.
So in short, they consume less.
Yes.
That's basically it.
Yep.
So where does Malaysia stand in the global standings of this?
Well, Malaysia is just below the world average. So in total, we are consuming in Malaysia about 1.5 times what nature can provide.
Mm-hmm.
So at current levels of consumption or per capita consumption, the sustainable population for Malaysia would only be about 19 million, whereas, of course, the population is actually about 30 million.
30 million.
So in summary, what we need to do is reduce our individual consumption by about one third, reduce what we're taking from nature by about one third.
Yeah. WWF released a report entitled Slow Road to Sustainability back in June, which you mentioned earlier. How is this related to the subject of, you know, Earth Overshoot Day?
Yeah, well, the initiative that I'm working with is called Market Transformation, and our focus is on soft commodities. So these are commodities sourced from farming, forestry, and fishing. And we've identified several priority soft commodities which generate some of the largest impacts on key ecosystems around the world. So these include commodities which are linked to deforestation, for example, palm oil, timber, and more in Latin America would be soy and beef. Those which are related to overfishing, which includes, of course, wild-caught fish, but also aquaculture. And those linked to water scarcity, such as cotton and sugarcane. Demand for all of these commodities is booming, actually.
Mm-hmm. Because of a growing population.
Because of a growing population and also growing wealth on average.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, the UN estimates that by 2050, the world will need to grow 70% more food than we did in 2009. Partly because of population growth and partly because people's diets are changing, so there's more demand for animal protein, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Companies use huge amounts of soft commodities in the products they make. For example, about half of the products on the average supermarket shelf contain palm oil.
Yes. Even on toothpaste, something as small as
exactly,
that.
Exactly, yeah. And we consume, even in Malaysia, we're consuming large amounts of soy, which we don't realize, but every time we eat meat, for example, mm-hmm. or consume dairy products, there's a lot of soy embedded in those products, which was used to feed the animals. So the companies have a big responsibility and an interest also to ensure the production and consumption of the commodities is sustainable.
Mm-hmm. So the report has, I guess, the overall aim to stimulate companies to make time-bound commitments. Am I right?
Yes. What we want companies to do is to clearly understand, to demonstrate that they understand the need for sourcing commodities which have been sourced sustainably.
Mm-hmm.
It's also in their interest, of course, because if commodities are not produced sustainably, the commodities eventually will not be available, especially at the prices that the companies want. So it's important for companies to manage their supply chains as well.
Yeah. So yeah. What are the other highlights from the report?
Well, we found a small number, only 9% of the companies that we looked at were very clear about the commitments to source only sustainable commodities,
mm-hmm.
and gave clear action plans and reported at least annually. So there are some leading companies which have recognized the challenges. But unfortunately, we found that most companies progress towards buying commodities sustainably is very slow. So, for example, fewer than half of the companies, and these are generally the world's leading companies, publish a sustainability report at all.
Because it's not a must, right? You don't have to do that.
No, although increasingly it is becoming, in Europe, for example, it is now by the end of the year will be a requirement.
Okay, and
even in Malaysia, Bursa Malaysia is looking at some environmental, social and governance reporting requirements.
Okay.
It's alarming for us that only 22 companies, and that was 9% of the total, have commitments and quantified action plans to source these commodities sustainably.
That's very troubling.
Yeah.
So how can we even hope to, you know, get them on board and to get them to do the right thing as such?
Again, it's a combined effort. I think NGOs like ourselves can work together with the companies and also the platforms, which are groups of companies, basically. Increasingly, we're working also with governments who are starting to recognize the challenges. Food security and food safety, for example, are key issues to many governments around the world.
Yeah.
And also investors and financiers are starting to take the issue very seriously. We saw recently, for example, that the world's largest sovereign fund, which is the Norwegian sovereign fund, is divesting from palm oil companies which are not RSPO members, for example.
Yeah.
The reason they're doing that is because companies which engage in unsustainable practices are a higher risk for them in the longer term.
Yeah, because like I know the IOI, for example, RSPO found them, you know, not up to the guidelines. And I think they suffered quite a number of losses of sales from that.
Especially
from Europe.
Yeah, reports that I've read show that many of the multinational companies have stopped buying from IOI because they have commitments to source only sustainable palm oil.
Yeah, so I suppose but organizations like the RSPO, that's what we need more of, would you say?
Yes, WWF recommends, for all of our priority commodities actually, we have recommended sustainable certification standards. So in seafood, for example, we recognize MSC and ASC.
Mm-hmm.
In timber products, we recognize FSC. Palm oil, obviously, RSPO.
And what other recommendations, you know, do you have from the report?
Well, we're urging companies to commit publicly to source by 2020 only credibly certified soft commodities for all of their requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And for many of the commodities, there's actually no reason why they can't already make those commitments because volumes already, the necessary volumes exist.
Yeah.
We want them also to publish quantified time-bound plans detailing the actions they're going to take to meet their commitments.
Yes, because that's the most important. You can say a lot, but where's the details?
Absolutely.
Devil's in the details, yeah.
Exactly. And not only have the plans, of course, but also to report the progress at least annually.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important that companies do this public communication because we want companies to say what they're doing and help us to communicate the challenges that we're all facing. It's not just the companies, but the companies' consumers are also facing the challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And then what we've seen the most progressive companies doing is engaging with their suppliers and whole industry sectors to drive change faster and on an even bigger scale. And finally, some of the leading companies are also engaging with policymakers, various government, national or regional governments, to advocate for regulations that require more sustainable production.
So what are the benefits to these companies, you know, to source all of their products and all of their resources sustainably?
Yeah, well, from discussing with some of the leading companies, I know that in the short term, companies are most concerned about protecting their reputation risk. So obviously, if they're attacked by consumers or whatever for sourcing commodities unsustainably, it can impact their share price. On the other hand, to be more positive, by communicating that they source sustainably, they can actually enhance their reputation. And some leading companies are taking that proactively. It's important to distinguish between genuine sustainability and just greenwashing.
Yes, which is a major problem.
Yes.
So again, the accountability part comes into play.
Absolutely. The other short-term benefit is improving profitability by reducing inputs of things like water, energy and raw materials. And in the longer term, the leading companies are realizing that they need to mitigate risk and build more resilient supply chains. If they can't get the raw materials they want in the quantities that they need at the prices that make them profitable,
mm-hmm.
then that's, of course, a huge risk to the company. And, of course, finally, although increasing profitability is very important for companies, behaving responsibly is also the right thing to do. After all, people working in companies are also consumers like you and me. And I think no company deliberately wants to be associated with environmental destruction in its supply chain.
What sort of role would consumers then play in this whole thing?
Well, in addition to taking action in terms of what they themselves are buying and minimizing the waste that they are producing, I think consumers can also have a vital impact in terms of challenging companies and seeking information about what the companies are doing to source commodities sustainably. And also challenge national and regional governments to ensure that they are managing and somehow guiding companies to source commodities sustainably.
And I think another thing that consumers can do is not just buying less, but what they do buy, make sure that it's sustainably sourced, you know, like actually read what they're buying.
Yes.
Yeah?
Unfortunately, many products don't specify sustainable ingredients, which is a challenge. But various NGOs like ourselves, also Oxfam and others, we produce scorecards for various commodities.
Yeah.
And these can be easily accessed online.
Yeah, I know WWF has one for seafood.
Yes, we recently produced one on soy, and later this year we'll be producing another one on palm oil.
Okay.
And Oxfam has done something similar in a scorecard called Behind the Brands.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, it's easy to see the ranking of the companies in terms of their sustainability.
Okay. How do you see the prospects of mankind on this planet? You know, what will happen if things don't change, in your opinion?
Well, if things don't change, then the significant harm to key ecosystems, but also to communities, will continue. And the things that we're seeing, such as biodiversity loss, and deforestation and soil degradation, and even climate change, will accelerate.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I just saw a recent study by researchers at Imperial College and University College of London and other leading universities, which concluded that already biodiversity loss has become so severe and widespread that it could affect Earth's abilities to sustain human life. Now, I don't want to scare people. We're not at that stage yet. But it's important that we do start to take action now and not wait until Overshoot has gone too far.
Until Overshoot Day happens in January.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
So I have an idea for a show that I want to do. It's called Go Green or Die. I think that pretty much summarizes it.
Yes. Actually,
in a very crude way.
Exactly. There's a famous quote, actually, that anyone who believes in infinite growth on a finite planet is either mad or an economist.
I think that summarizes it quite aptly.
Yes. I mean, it's mathematically impossible to continue taking resources infinitely from something that is finite.
Yep. Any last words, any last messages you'd like to leave us with this Earth Overshoot Day?
Well, I think we know at least some of the solutions, and what we need now is to accelerate the actions to make sure we can meet the future demand but avoid the negative environmental and social impacts. So sustainability, in summary, is good for people, the planet, and also business.
Thank you, Stephen. To find out more about Earth Overshoot Day, you can visit overshootday.org. And if you'd like to read more about the Slow Road to Sustainability report, you can visit panda.org. I've been speaking to Stephen Watson. He's the Director of Corporate Engagement at WWF International. And this is Earth Matters on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.